So this morning I want to talk about protecting each other, and this is a subject I said to Dave I wondered if it would fit in with the series, and he kindly agreed that yes, he thought it did. I don't find this a particularly easy kind of preach to give, really, but it's something I feel is important in terms of kind of protecting particularly our children and young people, and yeah, so hence just wanting to kind of do that today. This is a heads up on where we're going to go. I want to spend a little bit of time looking at the importance of children and young people, look at some of the challenges that face them, and I'm unashamedly going to take a look at mobile phones, internet. We're going to touch on some tricky subjects as we go through that, I think, and talk about social media and what have you. And the reason for doing that is that I think that our young people, our children face, and all of us actually, in terms of the internet, face challenges that weren't there 30 years ago, and they are significant. And the final thing I want to just cover is what can we do to help guard them, help sort of protect them. If we can step on, Jeremy, that would be great. And I want to encourage you to do what you can as we look at how can we protect, how can we help, how can we guard, and some of that will be praying. That's the reason I wanted to do that song this morning. I just think this verse is so important. Pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. Pray in the Spirit. Pray with the Spirit's help. Holy Spirit, come prompt us. Come guide us. Come show us what you want to pray us to pray about through our days. With all kinds of prayers and requests, with this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the Lord's people. I think we need to be doing that, don't we? Absolutely. Blenger and I have got two grown-up children. Luke is 29. Jamie is now 31. She can't believe she's 31, can she? She's 31 last week. Amazing. And when she was very much younger, she was about four, I think, she prayed for me at an event I was doing. And they were wise words for a four-year-old, wise word for any year-old, really. But I'll just say what she prayed, and I'll try and bear this in mind. She said this: "Dear Lord Jesus, please help Daddy to say what he has to say and help him to get it over with quickly." I thought that was brilliant. So I'm going to try and bear that in mind. There's a really good book that I'm taking some of the talk from this morning. This is by Bex Lewis, Raising Children in a Digital Age. Really recommend it to you. I've just bought it so you can have a little look if you'd like to. But really, really good book. And Jeremy, thank you. Let's press on. So this is a quote from a good friend of ours, Ishmael. Ishmael, if you've not come across him, is an amazing children's worker who really, I guess, fathered modern-day kids' work in the UK and many other countries. Amazing guy, and this is his kind of quote, really. Children are the church of today as well as the leaders of tomorrow. They're not the church of tomorrow. They are, but they're also church of today, and they're leaders of tomorrow. Amazing. Thank you, Jeremy. And in terms of what God might do through children, who knows? You know, the more I look at Scripture, the more I realise that there are no limits, really, in terms of what God will get up to and what age he will work through. But what do we expect? I think gone are the days where children's work was seen as something happening, you know, over there, and the important stuff was happening kind of here. I think today there's much more of a realisation that working with kids and young people is really, really important, just as important as a kind of adult program. But what do we expect God to do through children? It's not always what you might think. So I travel doing events around the country. We both do those and other countries, which is just wonderful. And I was doing a praise party one day in a church somewhere. And praise parties for me are real fun. Songs and puppets and science and all kinds of crazy stuff that we do. You've seen the circus and go wild stuff that I've done here. And I always want there to be a gospel message at some level. We often get children kind of responding to that. And over the years, I think one of the privileges of doing what I do is that actually you get stories coming back of children that met Jesus at one of those events some years ago, and they're still going on with God, and they often contact me and tell me they're getting baptized or they're now worship leaders in their own right. You know, what a privilege to be part of a child's life. Amazing. So that moment in a praise party, you just want to be a holy moment where you invite the children. I invite the children to, if they'd like to say a prayer after me, to start a friendship with Jesus. And I got to this point in this praise party. I knelt down. I often wear a cap. I took off the cap. And you want it to be a holy moment. You want it to be quiet and, you know, deep and meaningful, all that stuff. And people were quiet. right up to the point that I knelt down and took my cap off. Because when I took my cap off, this little three-year-old in the front row jumped to his feet, flung his arms wide, and with a look of complete horror on his face, shouted out at the top of his voice, "He's got no hair!" And everyone just burst out in laughing. It was just hilarious. But you know, my holy moment is like a balloon popping. It was like gone. But I kind of like that with kids, because you know, the great and challenging thing with children is if they're with you and you've got them with you, you really know it. If you haven't, then you really know it. And they tend to just say whatever comes into their mind. So it did make me chuckle. And just if you're working, as I know quite a few of you are, working, you know, with children, I think Belinda and I have been working with kids for, I don't know, 20, 25 years. That's the reason I've got no hair, I think. So just a word of warning. But it's not just kids who can surprise you. Again, I was leading a family service at a church in North London one day, and at the end of it, I was up the back by the CD table, and everyone had gone, and there was just a few people left. And an older lady, I think she was about mid-80s, was making her way out of the church, and she was making her way down the aisle just with a friend of hers. She had a frame she was using, and she spotted me on the little merchandise table at the back, and she headed for me. Now, in that situation, I've learned that, you know, something wonderfully encouraging could be about to come my way, or the other extreme, it could be something wonderfully not very encouraging. So I'm kind of standing there, I could see her coming towards me. What is she going to say? So she comes right up to me. It did take her a while with her frame. Came right up to me and she said, "Young man!" And I thought, I like you already. You are all right. She said, "My friend and I have been talking." And I'm like, oh my goodness. Brace yourself, Douglas. She said, "We have decided," brace yourself, Douglas, "we are both funky." I'm like, great. And with that, she pointed a Zimmer frame at the back door and carried on going and left the church. That was the extent of our conversations. Just amazing. And other things that can surprise us. I was doing a kids' weekend in Wales with a friend of mine, a place called Cefnlli. It's a wonderful Welsh kind of retreat centre. And really, really good time. It was a challenging time. I had 10 children for the weekend, some really difficult ones, really short attention spans. And I'm like, how on earth am I going to cope with this? Part of me wanted to kind of go home. But I went into the adult meeting on the Friday night. I said, you know what? I believe when children pray, things happen. This weekend, I'd love these kids to pray. You know, can you write down some prayer requests, grown-ups? We'll get the children praying. Let's see what God will do. It was a tricky weekend. It was wet and soggy and, oh, my goodness. But the Saturday night, with these 10 kids, my friend and I, we didn't do anything fancy. We actually lay down on our tummies in a circle, and I read out the prayer requests. And we got the kids to pray. Now, my expectation was, how long are they going to pray for? 5 minutes, if I'm really fortunate, because it's such a mixed age group, etc. And you know what? They didn't. They didn't pray for 5 minutes. These kids prayed for 45 minutes that night, which really amazed me. And there were some tricky things to pray for. One lady had written, "I'm a leader in the church. I'm struggling with cancer. Would you get the children to pray?" Her daughter was in our group. That's when the rubber hits the road. It's like, you know, what do you do with that? And I thought, well, I really believe that when kids pray, things happen. Let's do it in an appropriate way. Let's get the kids praying. One lady had written, "Doug, we're trying to finish a street kids home in Romania. We need £5,000 to finish that. Will you get these sort of children to pray?" So we did. So for 45 minutes, I could not believe it. That wasn't what I expected. Went home from that weekend, and on the Wednesday I got a phone call from the lady who'd given me the prayer request for the £5,000, and she said to me on the weekend, "You know what, I'm not going to ask the grown-ups to pray. I'm going to just want the children to pray." And she rang me and she said, "You know what, Doug, amazing, I got an envelope through the door this morning. Inside was a cheque for £5,000. She said, "Isn't God good?" And I thought, yeah, he is good. We sing songs about that, we declare that out. But actually, for me, that was a difficult weekend. That was a bit of a roller coaster ride of trying to grab these kids' attention, all the rest of it. In the midst of the ordinary, God came and did the extraordinary. And I just think, let's ask God to challenge our expectation. What do we expect him to do? And my heart is, Father God, you know, come and do more. But the church really does face some significant challenges today, particularly in terms of children and young people. And the battle is on for children's lives. And as I prepared this talk, I was shocked by some of the things that I came across. And today I hope in the nicest possible way that it kind of shocks you too. Okay, so thank you, Jeremy. In Jesus' time, kids were seen as a gift from God. Teaching them was really, really key. And the children are not only a gift from God and important in themselves, but they're also important for the church to have a future. Thanks, Jeremy. There's a guy called Peter Brearley who's written the book 21 Concerns for 21st Century Christians. This is from a few years back now, but there are no more current stats. This is staggering. I found it hard to get my head around this. 39% of churches in the UK have no under-11-year-olds at all. I was like, no, have a good look. Check in the cupboards. You know, surely you might be able to find a few somewhere. They're kind of bound to be lurking. But it gets worse as they get older. Nearly 50% of churches in the UK had no 11 to 14s. I'm like, what? Surely they must. And nearly 60% had no 15 to 19s. So you can see as the children are becoming young people and getting older, actually we're doing not such a good job at keeping them in church. We've got a bunch of young people in this church, which is awesome, but it's not the norm across the UK. So without children, it's obvious the church will stagnate and eventually die out. Thank you, Jeremy. So for the church to have a future, children's work is absolutely vital. And the battle is on for their lives, and no wonder. Thanks, Jeremy. Now, there's a great guy called George Barna. He's written a book called Transforming Our Children into Spiritual Champions. And it's really good. Really recommend it to you. And he says this: by the time a child is 13, they form their worldview, what they think about God and many other things they've decided. He says, people may move away from that in later life, but he says generally what people die believing is what they believe at 13. And that transformed my view of children's work. So I thought, actually, you know, we're not just here doing fluffy kids' work and what have you. Actually, what we're doing is we're shaping the worldview of children. What an amazing thing. And it suddenly dawned on me one day that for churches where you've got kids coming in who don't come from a Christian background, where else is that coming from? Because it's probably not, well, it may be happening at school, it may not, it's a mixed bag. There's no mainstream media that I'm aware of that brings any faith content for kids. So the kids' work we're doing really is vital to help shape the worldview of children. Thanks, Jeremy. So what does shape the worldview of a child? What stuff out in culture and all the rest of it will shape it? Just for a moment, just 1 minute, turn to the person next to you and just have a little chat. What do you think shapes the worldview of children? Go for it. What do you think, guys? Someone shout something out. What shapes the worldview of a child? Social media. Yes, indeed. Sorry? Parents. I thought you said hair for a moment. Parents, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Anything else? Music, peer pressure. Sorry, I missed that. Bullying, yeah, absolutely. It has an impact on them, doesn't it? Yeah, anything else? Yeah, kind of peer group. Yeah, friends and classmates. There's a bunch of stuff, isn't there, that does have an impact on children. And some of that can be very good, and some of that can be very negative. Now, obviously, the internet, kids have access to phones now, and we'll talk more about that as we go through. But a lot of that stuff can influence them as well, and some of that stuff can be really bad. Thanks, Jeremy. I want to say right at the start that in terms of talking about the internet, it's not all a disaster area out there. It's not all doom and gloom. I think there are significant challenges and risks with the internet and smartphone and TV and music, etc. But they also bring some really good things into your life as well. Not having to use a MacBook anymore is quite a handy thing. You can order your Starbucks online before you get to Starbucks. I mean, it's all good, isn't it? There's lots of good stuff there. And actually, there are some benefits that are an interesting one. So in 2012, there was a report that said about a quarter of teenagers said that social networking sites made them feel less shy and more outgoing. And the sort of majority of teenagers said it helped them stay in touch with friends they wouldn't regularly see and to get to know other students at home. And it can be really helpful, talking social media, for children, young people with additional needs, including those who find it hard talking to people face-to-face. It can be a good way of making friends. So there are benefits. It's not all doom and gloom. But I think the media does like to sensationalise things and make us think that everything is just absolutely dire out there. It's not. And I don't want to demonise social media and all the rest of it, but I still think that there are some challenges. And actually, with all the risks involved, it can make us quite fearful. But the truth is this, that actually with every technological advance, including the printing press and telephone and television, fears have been raised about what's going to happen and, you know, where's it going to go. A guy called Dan Gardner, in his book Risk, says this. I thought it was really interesting. Although all generations have faced risk, ours is the most terrified. History demonstrates that there have always been doom mongers, particularly in the press, but we are the healthiest, wealthiest, long-lived people in history, and we are increasingly afraid. This is one of the great paradoxes of our time. And he says this, after 9/11, people were afraid of flying, and more took to the roads, and the stats following 9/11 showed that that resulted in 5,000 more road deaths than would have happened in a normal year. Interesting. That fear thing is just an interesting thing. Thanks, Jeremy. This verse has really been speaking to me. I'm someone who can be quite fearful, as Belinda will tell you, and she has to beat me around the head regularly, not literally, but just to encourage me to see that God's in there and God's in it all. But I'll be honest, I struggle with anxiety sometimes. I struggle with, particularly if you've got new things on and new kind of projects. It can sound very exciting, but it can be an anxious time in terms of how's it all going to go, etc. I've been holding on to this verse, which is from the Amplified Bible. Do not let your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. Stop allowing yourselves to be agitated and disturbed, and do not let yourselves be intimidated and cowardly and unsettled. Those are actually quite hard-hitting words, but as I say, that's something that's been really helpful for me, as in the middle of the night sometimes waking up and just being fearful. It's like, God, thank you that you're bigger than all of this. You're bigger than the impact that the internet can have. And you will help us in the midst of our fears. If you're a fearful person, I want to encourage you, just hang on to that verse. But here's the thing. There are risks, and that's not helped by the fact with internet that it's a global thing, and there's no single obvious point to control it and contain it. But the digital world is here to stay. Thanks, Jeremy. And there are plenty of good things online. And what I'd like us to encourage us to do is to help children to make the most of it and avoid the worst of it. And I really like this quote. Swimming pools can be dangerous places for children. To protect them, one can install locks, put up fences, deploy alarms. All these measures are helpful. But by far the most important thing that one can do for children is to teach them to swim. I thought that was great. Thanks, Jeremy. So where are we now in terms of internet and all that sort of stuff, phones and what have you? I just want to give you a little heads up on that. So 63% of four to 16-year-olds now own their own mobile phone. What? Two out of three have their own tablet computer, which is just incredible, really. And actually, tablet sales have now overtaken laptops and PCs for the first time. 2016 was the first time that online viewing overtook TV viewing. That's a big shift. In the past, kids just watched TV. Now, for the first time, that has swung the other way. And as you can see there, average of 3 hours online and 2.1 hours TV per day. One in eight kids spend more than 6 hours a day online. And the go-to place for children now, apparently, YouTube. For music videos, funny stuff, how to sort stuff out, all the rest of it. They reckon half of all children use it every day, and more so than TV. Interesting. And they're most likely now to use their phone to access YouTube. Incredible. Nearly three quarters of kids have access to internet in their room. Interestingly, a quarter of 9 to 16-year-olds have the ability to figure out how to turn off parental controls and get around safety controls. So although it's really important to have filters and all the rest of it in place, let's recognize that's not enough. because kids are capable, some of them, of getting around it. And interestingly, in this report, it said that a quarter of children said they'd missed sleep and felt tired because they spent too much time on their devices. So, I was like, what? That's something you expect an adult to say, not a child to say. A quarter of them were tired because they spent too much time on their phones and their tablets. Incredible. But here's the hype that I think can come across through media, that children are so far ahead of us that we have no chance of keeping up. And Bex, in her book, suggests, no, that isn't right. That's what the media wants us to believe, because then it just sounds like a disaster. She says the truth is this: children, and all of us, to be honest, whatever age, are not great at everything. Some would be great at social media and hopeless at doing a search on Google. They're not all experts at everything. So no, that is a lie. Okay, so let's move on. Some of the challenges. Phones. When I grew up, we had, that was quite a long time ago now, I had hair and everything. It was brilliant. We had a phone in the hall. A phone call came in and it rang. Everyone heard it ring. You knew who was answering it. It was really embarrassing. If the girlfriend phoned, everyone could hear. You know, trying to do it quietly. But of course, now, a phone call comes in to a young person or a child or whoever. We don't know what's being said, do we? Or what's being texted. And in one of the newspapers I read a little time back, it said this: somehow we've let a private world develop. It's interesting. I think there's always been a private world. There always will be a private world. But it's somehow even more private now that things don't happen so much in a kind of public place. Texting is obviously one of the main forms of communication, although they're saying now that social media is starting to be used more. And in terms of phones, here's an interesting point. Should parents look at their children's text messages? Okay. No hesitation from Jeff there. Have a chat with the person next to you. Just see what you think. Should parents look at their children's text messages or their young people's text messages? Okay, what do we think? Anyone like, I mean, we know what Jeff thinks. So it's a joke. Okay. What do you guys think? Should parents look at their children, young people's text messages? What do you reckon? Okay, no, yes. Okay. Yeah, so if they look at it, it challenges the trust issue. Yeah, okay, that's cool. So no from this side. Okay, that's fine. Anyone like to say anything else? Yeah, David. Okay, cool. Thank you for that. I don't think I've ever had anyone wolf whistling us in the service before, but hey, that's cool. I know it wasn't for me. Absolutely. Any other? I'm dragging it back now. Any other comments? Angela. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay, so depends on age. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Okay. If it's 20-year-old, not going to look at their phone. Okay, that's cool. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. Right. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, just in case anyone didn't hear all that, so she's 11. Part of the agreement of her having a phone was that she would leave it downstairs at night and you'd be able to look what's going on, and you'd manage to spot, or she spotted some bullying starting. So that's really good. That's a great way of handling it, yeah. Yeah. So it was funny doing this talk somewhere else where all the young people were like, no, not in a million years is anyone going to see our messages, thank you very much. And a parent over here said, and it wasn't this way around, there's a parent over here said, yeah, totally, I want to protect them, but you think, you know, we'll think that you don't trust us, and which I totally understand all that. And I think one of the overall concerns is this, that it's sometimes not that the parent doesn't trust the person involved, whether it's a child or a young person, they don't trust the people they're speaking to. So that's an interesting one. I wonder overall, and this is quite controversial, and it's obviously down to parents to sort out, you know, what they think and feel that they should do. I think if you look without telling, that could be seen as spying and could break the trust thing completely. But I wonder overall with this whole area if the key thing is to talk about it. It sounds like it's happened there when you're aware of what's going on, which is really cool. To talk about it is really key, and to start that at a really young age, because if the lines of communication are open, there's much more chance they'll be honest about what's going on. Because let's face it, you can delete history. This is true of laptops as well, isn't it? You can delete the history, so you might go and have a look, but actually it could be stuff going on that you can't see because they've taken it off. So interesting. Let's talk about sexting. Sure, you've all heard of that, where children send a naked picture of themselves to each other. Do you know, between 2013 and 2015, there was a 12-fold increase in sexting police cases. In 2015, there were 700 cases, and it's just rising all the time. A huge survey of 25,000 kids, it's an EU survey, showed that 15% had seen or received sext messages. These are what our kids are dealing with. And probably our young people too are dealing with these issues. Let's talk about pornography. The media impression that what they'd like us to believe, I think, is this, that it's a massive, massive problem. What's the reality? I think it is a problem. And that same online survey of 25,000 children and young people showed that of the 25,000 surveyed, 6,000 had seen at least one pornographic image. Now, I don't think that's as high as the media would like us to believe. I've seen reports where it's like, you know, 70, 80, 90% have seen kind of pornographic images. That maybe gives a more measured view of that. But even so, a quarter of that age group, 4 to 16, seeing pornographic images, I think is still horrendous. Yesterday, we were with some friends, and she was saying that their granddaughter, who's, I think, 18 months, when she comes over, can swipe on the tablet. I'm sure you guys have seen this. You know, kids learning to swipe before they can talk. Incredible, you know. And it's not no wonder if they just swipe in. And I think she likes Peppa Pig, so she's looking for Peppa Pig. But in looking for Peppa Pig and swiping, who knows what you might come across? You know, the truth is that children younger and younger and younger are using technology, which means there's more chance that they're going to be coming across something that's really not helpful. So the truth is this, that actually large numbers of children will regularly come across pornography. And the really worrying thing is that this is not the stuff of top shelf newsagent sort of magazines, etc. Some of this stuff is violent and depraved and fairly horrendous. And I think a really important question is this. For children growing up watching some of these images, what is normal? What is normal? And actually what I hear is that the expectation... you know, boys, their expectation of what girls are meant to do now is a lot of it can, or some of it can be based on what they've seen online. I'm not saying that's true of everyone. I don't want to over-sensationalise that. But this is what is going on. This is why children are at risk. Because what is normal for these children? Stephen Biddulph, in his book Raising Girls, says this: the current generation is, in one unenviable sense, utterly unique. It's the first to grow up exposed to hardcore pornography. And Alison Pearson, writing in The Telegraph a couple of years ago, said this, and this shocked me. This absolutely shocked me. A friend's daughter recently started at a highly regarded boarding school. When her mother asked her how she was doing in the mixed-sex environment, the girl said quietly, "You have to give the boys oral sex, or they will get cross." Reeling with shock, the mother protested her darling daughter did not have to do anything of the sort. "Oh, yes, you do," replied the girl. "And you have to shave down there too, or the boys don't like it." Now, that's obviously coming from porn stars who apparently have to be hair-free, but the girl in question was not some brazen, street-smart sixth former. She was 14 years old. It's horrendous, some of the stuff that is going on. A lady called Alison Thompson, writing in the Times a couple of years ago, said this, and I really, really like this. She said, "This is not about telling your children to say no to sex before marriage. It's about explaining that in the right place, at the right time, with the right person, it can be amazing. Sex is about passion, not porn. It's what adults do, not actors. All that matters is what it feels like. And I would add, what it makes the other person feel like. And you never have to do anything that makes you uncomfortable." Is that so embarrassing to tell your child? I hope not. I thought that was really good. A really sort of measured view of it. But it's a challenge. Facebook. January 2016 showed that 78% of 11 to 12 year olds had a social media account, even though the age limit is 13. And you've probably seen in the news this week, the BBC and Facebook, you know, they were looking at some of the images there and found some things that were really unhelpful, and brought to the attention of Facebook, who promptly reported the BBC to the police, which is just horrendous. But there are reports of children as young as four having a Facebook account. What? I can only just handle Facebook, let alone I can't handle Facebook. Without my wife to help me, I'd never have got on Facebook. But a four-year-old, just incredible. A third of children through Facebook have witnessed bullying online. A fifth have been bullied or trolled online. And it used to be the case that you could escape from bullying by going home, but now, obviously, bullying can follow you 24/7, which can all sound very negative. And again, the media wants us to think, oh, it's terrible and it's awful, and it is awful. But actually, here's the thing, and it's exactly what the lady there said a little bit earlier. Actually, with her daughter, it helped her to see that bullying was starting. Actually, what texting gives us is the ability to see a bullying trail, to look back, and there's proof of what has gone on. So it's not good, but also, it's, you know, there's some helpful things in there as well. I'm not going to talk about Instagram and Snapchat and WhatsApp and 101 other things that are out there, but there's a bunch of stuff out there that brings a lot of benefits but brings quite a lot of challenges as well. So what do we do? Let's move forward. Thank you, Jeremy. What do we do? One important thing is, I think it's so important that we don't just assume it's going to be okay, and I'm sure nobody would. We don't just leave it. I think the overriding thing that I'd like to come through from this is that I think talking is such a key thing, and to start that really young. If you've got young kids, can I really encourage you to talk at an early age? And, you know, we can't control a child's whole world, online or offline. And what actually we need to try and do is to give the children the ability to deal with the problems that they're coming across, and to be able to talk about that with them as well. I think as well that, and this is part of what children's work needs to be, as well as parenting, is encouraging children to make good choices when no one is there watching them. Because we can't be there all the time. And actually that's true of all of us online, isn't it? Making good choices when no one else is watching. And if it's a challenge for you, can I encourage you to grab some prayer? If any of those areas you're finding a real challenge in terms of social media or pornography or whatever, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and God will help you in all of that. And I think what Angela said is really important as well in terms of the age and the particular child. Someone called Dr. Leslie Haddon, in that survey of 25,000 people, said this: children are not all the same. Much of what is considered risky by one child will be considered no problem by others. So actually, as well as age, which is important, what's really important is to ask children what bothers them. What bothers them online? What are they finding difficult? And to listen to what they say. And in terms of age limits and all the rest of it, when should someone have a phone or not have a phone? I think what is really key is it actually comes down to the child. You know, it won't be 8 or 11 or whatever for every child. It will be different for different children. And that's where they're just talking it through, I think, is so important. If you've got young kids, one exercise that, again, Beck suggests in her book, which I think is really good, is list top 10 values that you'd like to demonstrate online. Honesty, friendliness, all that kind of thing, and sort of behaviours to avoid. And some really practical stuff. in terms of what we do, you know, if you've got young children, make sure you've got filtering software. Absolutely is a must. Make sure you have it. If you're using Google, you can use Google Safe Settings. Recognise what I said earlier, that older children could work around some of that. The talking about it is really important, but a baseline thing, I think, is make sure you've got some limits in there. And the whole thing of, you know, I've heard before about handing the phone in at night, maybe turning the router off at night, or the kind of internet hub. I know that could be a bit controversial, but I think talking about all this with our children and with our young people, to be honest, is really, really important. And let's make kids aware that actually what they do online stays online. The whole digital fingerprint. And again, Beck says in her book, I thought it was really good, encourage your child to think about what their profile would look like and if an alien landed and had just their social media to look at. Interesting. And we need to help kids to understand about avoiding scams, and not giving out personal information and all that kind of stuff. And actually, just something that occurred to me as I come to the end of this happy talk is I think one of the challenges with the digital age, which is not really a moral issue, but I think it is a challenge, is this, that we can be so caught up on our phones, and I'm guilty of this as well, that actually do we give other people our full attention? Because I think we can be half listening. I'm a master of half listening. If I've learned anything from being married, it is Douglas is a world of less pain in my world if actually I do listen and I do communicate. And my wife is normally right. It is true. But I have been guilty many times of half listening, or quite often, you know, in one ear, straight out the other, and gone. But I think there might be something in that. That actually, how often do we give people our full attention? Or are we half listening and our mind is on something else? I have a feeling that full attention is probably a precious commodity. Okay, kind of almost last word. This comes from Bex's book, and it's a quote from a parent of a 15-year-old. Parents have to be actively involved in their children's online life. It's not a privacy issue, it's a parenting one. We have to keep them safe. Teach them to manage themselves in a safely controlled environment and be smartly aware of the culture they're part of. Young people, this is controversial, young people can be biologically hindered from making wise decisions. To be honest, as a grown-up, I'm biologically hindered from making wise decisions, so I don't think that's just limited to young people at all. And they need to be nurtured, encouraged, supported, and kept safe in the real and virtual worlds. We have to get beyond the notion that because they look as though they're grown up, they're capable of managing their own lives in an adult way. As I say, sometimes I'm not capable of doing that. I've observed that my daughter needs me more now as a teenager than she did as a toddler. The needs are different, but if anything, far more serious. She deserves my input, my guidance, and my protection. And I haven't come this far now to abandon her now. Really moves me. Thanks, Jeremy. There's never been a time in history when the children of the world have been more spiritually at risk than they are now. Thanks, Jeremy. Protecting and reaching children is vital. Absolutely vital. One more slide, thank you. And I know it's a well-known phrase, but it is true. It takes a village to raise a child. I want to bring it back to where I started and the reason we did the never going to give up, never going to give in, keep on praying. You know, we need to find ways to talk with our children and young people we're connected with. That's so important. Open those lines of communication and do it early. Can I really emphasize that? Start early. Start early. Make sure you've got those filtering things in place. You know, when they're 18 months and they're online, got to have it. Don't assume it's all going to be okay. But actually, we all have a role to play in the raising of these children. You know, the whole thing of church community is about loving each other. What can that mean? It can mean praying. Pray in the Spirit on all occasions, with all kinds of prayers and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always, always keep on praying for all the Lord's people. We're that village. We're part of raising these young people, these children. My heart is, let's protect them. Let's pray for them. Let's encourage them. Let's help them see that they're amazing. And actually, thank you, Jeremy, actually, there are no limits, I think, in terms of what God will do. I will pour out my Spirit on all people, not just grown-ups. no limits in Scripture. You don't have to reach a certain age before God will pour His Spirit out on you and use you, have a relationship with you. I will pour my Spirit out on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions. Incredible. Thanks, Jeremy. It's a challenge. And I make no apology for the fact that it's some of that might be a bit controversial. And it's like, oh my goodness, as I said at the start, it's not my happiest preach to give. But I just feel passionate that it's important. These young people, our children, are important. And the battle is on for their lives. At the very least, we can pray. They need, you know, these kids and young people need uncles and aunts as well as parents together. You know, we can help these children stay safe and young people. And who knows what God will come and do through them. Who knows? No limits. No limits.